In this episode of the No Gray Areas podcast, I sit down to interview Darrow Miller, one of my favorite authors and a man whose writings revolutionized my own thinking. Darrow is the author of 19 books and a plethora of articles and blogs. Today, he dives into the challenges of conventional beliefs, pressing social issues, mistreatment of women in modern culture, and the importance of education in today's society. Let's jump in. Darrow Miller, thank you so much for joining us on No Gray Areas. This is like having a hero of faith sitting across from me. I'm a ferocious reader. Part of our audience knows that. I probably read, I don't know, two books a week or something. And I have a list of 5 to 10 books that have had the biggest impact in my life. Mm. And yours is one of those. We're going to get into that in a little bit.
I'm honored by that.
Yeah. So I love having you here. I'm so excited. The book that had such a big impact in my life was Discipling the Nations. I read that. I was in my, I think, mid to late 30s at the time. And that's all about worldview. And we're going to unpack that in a little bit. But you messed me up. You made me lose sleep for 2 or 3 nights, Darrow.
I'm glad. Yes. That's what my calling is to get people to lose sleep.
Yes. Well, you did it with me for sure. Because in that book, you ask the question, once you unpack what worldview is and the importance of it, and again, we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but then you ask the question, where is your worldview tainted? You know, where is it wrong? And why that messed me up so much is I wouldn't believe my worldview if I didn't believe it was right. Mm-hmm. You know, my whatever it was for my family, my culture, whatever. So you messed me up because I really started wrestling with what are some beliefs that I've held my whole life that maybe aren't true.
And that are affecting your decisions.
Yes.
And the consequences of those decisions.
Yes.
That's right.
But that's why I put that in one of the top 10 books that have had the biggest impact on me is because now I'm 52. And so it's been, you know, almost 2 decades since I read that book. And I still wrestle with those things at times. And I'm still trying to unpack worldviews or beliefs that I bought into that are not that are affecting me in an errant way or an unhealthy way. But that's a little bit of your story too, right?
It is very much so. I had those 2 sleepless nights when I was in my early 20s. My wife and I had traveled to Israel, studied in Israel for 5 months, and then hitchhiked from Israel to Switzerland. And we were
Wait. You hitchhiked from Israel to Switzerland?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's not a short distance.
No. Well, we actually flew from Tel Aviv to Istanbul and then hitchhiked from Istanbul to Switzerland.
Yeah, yeah.
The short part
I won't even ask if your parents were excited about that. If they
No.
Didn't. Yeah.
They weren't excited about us going to Israel either.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. What year was that?
A few months after the Six-Day War.
Okay, that's why they weren't excited.
They
It'd be like going to Israel right now.
Yes,
like in
exactly.
The current situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys decide to go to Israel, and then you start hitchhiking across Europe.
Yeah, exactly.
So what happens then in that process?
We ended up at a place in Switzerland called Le Brie Fellowship. It was the home of Francis and Edith Schaeffer. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget the night that the question was asked me, or a statement given to me that threw my life upside down.
From Francis?
No, from a German lawyer named Udo Mittelmann.
Okay.
And we were staying in his home. He and his wife, Deborah Mittelmann, were hosting us. It was a Sunday night, and we were sitting around having high tea, little cups of tea, finger foods, British tradition, classical music playing in the background. Flowers, cut dried flowers from the Swiss hillside, and snow lightly
sounds like
falling.
A movie scene.
It was. Oh, it's a movie scene. The ambiance was incredible. Yeah. And we were having this very good conversation, and Udo turns to me and he said, "You know, Darrow, Christianity's true, even if you don't believe it."
Wow.
Yeah. And I looked at him and I said, "What did you say?" He said, "Christianity's true, even if you don't believe it." And I had been taught all my life that Christianity was true because I believed it. That's the person who led me to Christ. That's how he phrased it. I was involved in Young Life, Campus Crusade, went to an evangelical seminary. Why was Christianity true?
Because you believed it. And this guy rocks your world.
He rocks my world. And I didn't sleep for two nights. I literally tossed and turned. What is Udo saying to me?
Yeah.
And I finally figured it out. He was saying, you know, Daryl, Christianity is true even if no one in the world believes. It's true to what's real. It's true because God exists. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that just blew me away.
So why did that have such a profound impact on you?
Well, I'd been a Christian since I was about 13 years old, and I had Christ in my heart. Mm-hmm. And this didn't challenge my faith in Christ, but it challenged my concept of what did it mean to be a Christian. Mm-hmm. And that's what rocked my boat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I realized I had a born-again heart, but a pagan mind. I'd grown up in the United States.
That's deep right there.
Yeah. I'd grown up in the United States. I'd been educated in state-sponsored education, public schools.
Yeah.
And the whole milieu of public schools, as I learned later, I couldn't have told you at that moment, but I've learned later as I've looked at history, the whole milieu of public schools was born out of a Darwin evolutionary framework where all of life is integrated around an evolutionary motif.
Yeah.
It wasn't always that way. There was a period of time and history where all of life was focused around a biblical motif. Mm-hmm. God exists. Mm-hmm. You were made in his image. Mm-hmm. He loves you. He loves you so much that he sent his son to die for you. Mm-hmm. That's the biblical motif, and it has all sorts of implications for our lives.
Yeah.
But I wasn't taught that in school. Yeah. I was taught a Darwinian, an evolutionary framework in which evolutionism was the integration point of all the subjects I was taught in school. So I had a born-again heart and an unregenerate mind, and I was living in two worlds.
Yeah.
And it was easy to live there because I could be a Christian on Sunday when I go to church or on Wednesday night Bible study, but not ask the hard questions on Monday because I was totally enmeshed, engaged with a secular materialistic framework. That's where life was lived out.
Well, and that's one of the things that your book, the one that we're talking about, referring to, because you wrote a lot of books, as I mentioned in the intro, and we'll unpack some of those here in a moment. But that's another thing that your book did so marvelously for me, was talking about how we dichotomize life so often.
Yes.
Our Western thinking does, right? You have, even if we're going to do an illustration, we show the physical, we'll almost show it with there's the physical, there's the spiritual, the emotional. But really, God created us, and those are all integrated.
That's right.
Yeah.
But in an evolutionary framework, the only thing that is real is nature.
Yeah.
We're only considering half the universe.
Yeah.
No, there's a whole universe. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. God inhabits that universe. He created that universe. But we learn in school there's only half a universe, and that's nature.
Yeah.
Anything that is outside of nature is a figment of our imagination.
Yeah. What year was this when you were with Francis Schaeffer?
1961, I think.
Okay, so what's fascinating about that is...
No, 1970.
Okay, 1970. 1970, you have a few sleepless nights. And then, I don't know what year you wrote the book, but the year I read it was probably 2004, 2005. So you caused me to have a few sleepless nights all those years later. And it was really over something very similar. Because where you're saying it was truth is truth whether you believe it or not.
That's right.
Right? That's what you were wrestling
with. That's right.
And I'm wrestling with the fact that I'm believing some things that I thought were truth, but they're not, and it's affecting me.
That's right.
And I believe that they're truth because I grew up with a family or in a culture.
Sure.
I went to a school, and somehow I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
So we both had some sleepless nights over really the same issue, didn't we?
That's right.
But I can blame mine on you.
Well, I'm glad yes, you had those sleepless nights because God used it to change the course of your life.
Yeah, and he's still using it.
Yeah.
He's still using it. I still know that. And I'd like to ask you, I mean, you've lived a lot of years since then.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you haven't arrived on having all that worked out?
No, I haven't. I'm 80 years old and I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
That's how deeply entrenched our early education is and our early socialization.
Yeah.
It's totally entrenched in us and we don't realize this just is what life is like.
Yeah.
Well, it's not.
Yep.
But we can't see beyond what we see.
Yeah. Well, let me unpack two things with you, two big things. One of them is worldview, and then the other one is Imago Dei. But worldview, first of all, for our audience listening, that's not a word that they're going to probably be in the Fry's grocery store or Safeway grocery store today and hear someone say worldview, mm-hmm. most likely. So first of all, help us understand what that is and why everyone has one.
Another way of saying it is a mindset.
Okay.
That's a simpler way of saying it.
Yeah.
But it is a comprehensive mindset. It's the way you see the world. Uh-huh. And you have gained this as you've learned your language. You've gained it as you go to school, as you watch television, as you play video games. All these things are shaping your mindset. And you don't know it.
Can I back up really quick on one thing just to... Well, you said learning a language, and I think that's so important for our audience to get, because the language you learn was part of forming your mindset or your worldview.
That is absolutely correct.
There's certain languages that wouldn't have a word for maybe future or, you know, and so
that's right.
That's a mindset then that they're not really thinking about the future. Our language, most of our listeners, probably English is our first language, that was part of creating our mindset or worldview, right or wrong.
That's right. And we conceive, because we are children of a biblical framework way back when, we conceive of a past, present, and future.
Yes.
We think in those three terms. We can reflect on the events of our childhood, the things that we did, enjoy those things. Mm-hmm. We can be in the present like we are right now, mm-hmm. enjoying this time, and we can dream of what we could do next.
Yeah.
Past, present, and future.
But some cultures wouldn't necessarily think that way
they don't.
As much.
Let me give you an example.
Yeah.
John Mbiti was a philosopher and historian from Kenya. He wrote a book called The Religions and Philosophies of Africa. And he had a chapter in the book on the African concept of time. And he said there is not one dialect in the whole continent of Africa that has a concept of future.
So as they're forming their language, as a kid is growing up and learning,
there's no future.
There's the past and the present,
past
but no future.
That's right. So what is life like that for a kid, for an adult, for a whole continent, if there's no concept of future?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that the future allows us to do? It allows us to create calendars, to plan, to dream. Mm-hmm. All of these things that we take for granted in the West, but without the concept of future and the word future, there's no place for that in a person's mind.
Yeah.
That's how profound worldview
is. And even right and wrong, right? Like it's tied to that morality a little bit. Like there's some things that if I really believe that what God says about certain things, I may not do this. Or even if you don't believe in God, but you want to have a healthy marriage, you may say no to this extramarital affair because you want to have a healthy marriage in your future.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not ever thinking about that, and everything's just in the moment.
Just today and what you feel in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it probably changes how you think through that. So again, I'm wanting our audience to understand that, again, the importance that they have. What did you call it? Worldview. And then you said
a mindset.
A mindset that they have that's built around the language they learn, the movies, the TVs they watch, the books they read, the school they went to, right?
That's right.
Okay.
I'll give you another example because I think it's critically important to understand this very point. One of the greatest causes of poverty in the world is a lie.
Okay.
We think poverty is caused by lack of money.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yes.
That's a materialistic paradigm of poverty.
Yes. World Bank, I think it was decades ago, they talked about that any country, one of their greatest resources that they have that's going to bring worth, money, GDP, to that country is going to be human capital.
That's right.
So you and I have both been in countries. I remember the first time I really traveled into a developing country, a third world country, I was in Uganda. And I remember driving around Uganda and looking around and going, there is a plethora of natural resources. Their poverty is not because of a lack of natural resources. And that's usually what we think of when we look at a country, we're going, oh, they don't have the resources.
Because we have a materialistic mindset.
Yes.
You could work for a nonprofit organization. You could work for a Christian nonprofit organization. And you look at the cause of poverty through the lens of a materialistic mind. Mm-hmm. Well, why are people poor?
They're lacking resources.
They're lacking money. They're lacking resources. Mm-hmm. So what do you do?
You
create
give them
a mechanism to give them money and resources. Mm-hmm. And what that teaches them is development is receiving money and resources from the West.
Yeah.
It does not break the paradigm they have in their mind to see, oh, we are made in the image of God. God has blessed our nation. We have all of these resources. We have all of these people who are smart, who are creative. We have everything we need to develop.
Uh-huh.
No, we stifle that because we are stifled in our own minds saying that they're poor because they do not have money and do not have resources. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It's a crime.
Yeah. And that's why both in our country, we see it in our country, but we see it around the world, where when we pour millions or billions of dollars and we're doing it from that perspective and we look 20, 30, 40 years later, we still have poverty there.
It's and like, then well, we conclude we haven't given enough.
And we have to just give
and
more.
And so we just have to give more because money is what solves problems.
Yeah. Now, just to insert this really quickly, I don't think you're saying that resources are completely out of the
question. No, like they're not.
They're necessary.
They are.
But they're
and compassion is necessary.
Yes. But it's not the primary.
They're not the core of the issue.
Yeah.
One of the greatest causes of poverty in the world is a lie. And the lie is that men are superior to women. Virtually everywhere you go in the world, that sexist culture is present. It's in Asia, it's in Latin America, it's in Africa. When I was in Africa teaching on this, I had a young man come up to me and he said, Darryl, in my tribe, we don't have a word for woman. And I said, how can that be? Half the people in your tribe are female. No, we don't have a word for woman. So what do you call a woman? A tool.
And that word creates a mindset or a worldview, doesn't
it? It reflects a mindset.
Yes.
Men are human. Women
are tool.
Tools.
Yeah.
Now, when you grow up with that mindset and the whole culture has that mindset, how are women treated?
Like tools.
Like tools. And what breaks that mindset is a biblical worldview in which we're made in the image of the living God.
Male and female.
Male and female, not just male. Mm-hmm. Genesis 1, 26 and 27, he made them in his image, male and female.
Yeah.
That is a profound revelation from the heart of God. And that is what not only gives us our humanity and our being made imago Dei, it is what gives women total dignity. And that is the thing that breaks the bondage of poverty.
Yeah. And when why does that lie create poverty? I think it's important to, because I know this is just how you've lived so many decades. So there's probably people that are listening right now that aren't disagreeing with you, but they just don't know. What do you mean that's creating poverty, that you think of women as second-class citizens or as tools?
Well, you eliminate all the potential they have as human beings,
yeah.
For one.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's
right?
Huge.
That's huge. You
it's
take half a population.
And their potential is gone,
yeah.
Because you don't see them as having mm-hmm. potential.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you treat them as tools.
Yeah.
Go do this, go do that. You treat them as slaves. In fact, in some cultures, the word for woman is slave. I've had the habit of, where I'm lecturing, of asking people, what do you call a woman in your native tongue?
Yeah.
And it's horrible.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that you hear.
Yeah.
So if in the native tongue, the word for woman is slave, how is she treated?
And then you think you get into a marriage. Again, this goes back to worldview or mindset that's so important. If from the time you were a little boy and the language you learned was that woman is slave or tool, in a marriage, then you're not looking at her as being the image of God.
As your equal.
As your equal.
No.
As someone with the fingerprints of God on their life.
Right.
They're a tool, and that's how you'll treat them.
That's how you'll treat
them. Right?
And
then you have a culture that does that for generation after generation.
And this is normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is what women expect. Mm-hmm. They expect to be treated this way because this is the worldview of the culture. And because you've raised this, let me say something else.
Yes.
That I try to convey when I'm speaking to men and women. In the creation, God begins by creating the raw material. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. So there was clay, if you're speaking in terms of an artist, or a blank canvas, if you're speaking in terms of a painter. And each stage of the creation, God is bringing more order out of the unorder, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he forms this matter, and now you have sun, moon, and stars. Then he creates plant life, then he creates animal life, and then he goes on to Genesis 2, and who does he make first?
Man.
Man from the dust of the ground.
Yeah.
He's not finished yet. And each time he forms something a little higher, a little bit more refined.
I see where you're going with this, and I agree with you, my friend.
And what does he create last? Women.
Little more refined.
A little more refined.
Way better.
And when I share this, people have never had that thought before.
Well, you just gave me goosebumps when you were talking about it because, it makes me tear up to think about if you think about so much of the world where a woman was considered a tool or a slave, and the day that she began to realize, like, wait, what? I'm the pinnacle of creation?
That's right.
I mean, even a little better
than
men. She's
the crescendo of creation, the high watermark of creation. Totally different than a sexist society has.
Yes.
And that, I can tell you, I see women when they hear that, they've never heard that before. And they've never heard it from a man before.
Yeah.
And they're in tears.
Yeah.
And I see men who are stunned because of how they have treated women.
Yeah.
And the last part of this, Adam named his wife Eve. And that means life giver. Who gave life? God. God is the giver of life. What is Eve named?
Life giver.
She is the life giver.
Huh. Wow.
It blows you away when you think about it.
Yeah.
As the church, we need to teach this and affirm this.
You also see the attack of the enemy in this, though, don't you? Because I remember once reading about, the worst treated, and then it gave, I won't give what their answer was, but there was a name of an ethnic group that was the most worst treated people in the history of the world. And I remember reading that, pausing and going, I don't know if I agree with that. And then I just went back and forth. But I've thought about it. The most mistreated people on this planet have been women throughout history. Would you say?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So
they haven't existed in people's minds.
Yeah. I
know. They're tools.
And most cultures have been
slaves.
That way. Yeah. Mistreated, abused. But again, it goes back to the importance of a biblical worldview. You open up the beginning of the narrative, the beginning of the story, and that's what you're unpacking for us, shows that they're the crescendo, that they're the peak of his creation.
That's right.
That should change how they view themselves as women. That should change how
we treat them as women. Yes.
How a culture treats them.
That's right.
But history is full of countries, worldviews that are the opposite, which I just think we believe we have an enemy, right? Yeah. And that enemy knows how that story starts, and he spent his entire time through history trying to make sure that the peak of his creation is abused.
That's right.
Yeah. Darrow, you and I could talk for hours. Man, I love this. Let me just point out a couple of books that you've written here for the audience. And though most of our audience are listening on audio, those that are watching, I'm holding the book up for them. But this is called The Grand Design. And I want to put this one up because this is really what we're talking about right now. The Grand Design, Rediscovering Male and Female as the Image of God. Now, you've used that term a few times, Imago Deo, right? That's Latin for image of God.
That's
or
right.
Image bearers, right? Why is that so important?
Because we're not merely animals, which is what evolution teaches.
And why is that important, though?
Because if we're animals, we're just physical beings, and we are here for a short time, and we die, and we go to the grave.
Yeah.
I remember at ASU, and I was in my freshman sociology class, Soc 101, the professor came out on the stage and he said, "What is the purpose of a life of a baby that dies in infancy?" And then he paced up and down the stage because he wanted all those 19-year-olds and 18-year-olds to think about that question. What's the purpose of a child that dies in infancy?
Where did he go with that?
Came back to the microphone after a couple of minutes, said the purpose of a child that dies in infancy is to be fertilizer for a tree.
It's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking, but that's the mentality.
Yeah, but that is true if evolution is true.
If evolution is true, that is true. And because people think evolution is true, the life of a baby means nothing.
Yeah.
And we abort millions of them because the life of a baby is not sacred.
Well, this is so important for what this podcast is about, the power and complexity of human choice.
Yes.
Again, if we're just highly evolved animals, then again, like to use an example, I see a beautiful woman over there and I'm a highly evolved animal, then I can't control my urges, and that's like animal kingdom, right? I'll just go take her. But that's the evolutionary mindset, right?
That's right.
But we go, no, I'm not an animal. I'm the peak of his creation.
I'm one
level down from the peak of the creation. But because of that, I have been given the power of human choice. I don't have to say yes to that urge.
That's right.
I can say no to
this. I can say no. And that's why the name of your program is so powerful, because it takes people back to the choices they make, and that those choices create ripples. And some of those ripples will go on forever.
Yeah.
And we don't realize that.
Yeah.
I remember I had a man come up to me one time, not come up to me, I met him, and he said, "I can't believe that I let an 18-year-old boy make decisions that shaped the course of my life." Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's a stupid thing. Why would you do that? And then I realized he was talking about himself, that he made decisions at an 18-year-old that set him on a track for his life. And he's looking back on it now.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what you're saying with your show.
Well, and Darrow, I read a statistic recently, and I'm probably going to goof up the percentage, but I know it's a high percentage. You said something like 70% of our life decisions will be made between like 18 and 25.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to make a lot of decisions. But
sure.
Those are formative years. And so what that man said was, man, that's so deep and wise, isn't it? But I would say to anybody who's 18 to 25 or 18 to 30 or so, for them to really think through, the decisions you're making are going to have a massive impact on your future.
Yeah, very definitely.
Yeah. So when we go back to this Imago Dei, and the power and complexity of human choice, and the idea that ideas have consequences. You've mentioned that term. Help us with that a little bit too, where we go, ideas have consequences. Your beliefs have consequences.
Well, going back to Imago Dei, there is no God, there is no Imago Dei. Who are we? Well, we're animals. But I imagine myself, I'm born a boy, but I imagine myself as a girl. Now what do? I start identifying as a girl. Then what do? I go and have surgery. I take hormones. I have my breasts cut off. What are we doing?
Yeah.
What have we called this in the past?
Well, in the past we probably called there's, I don't know if we'd call it mental illness. But
no, but in terms of physically what we're doing to children's bodies.
Oh, abuse.
It's abuse.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's mutilation.
Yeah.
We are still, there's still groups, and the NGO that I worked for years had a program to fight female genital mutilation.
Yes, which was prevalent
was
in parts of Africa.
That's right,
but
Africa and the Middle East.
Yes.
And we just said that is evil.
And it is.
And it is evil. And what do we do today?
Yeah.
It's being promoted today.
Yeah.
Because of false ideas.
Yeah. Ideas have consequences.
Ideas have consequences. And these children's lives are going to be changed forever.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're promoting that.
And this is where we go back to, again, Romans 12:2 says, transformation comes from renewing the mind.
That's right.
Which is what you're so passionate about. You quote often in your books or talk often about, because it's renewing the mind. And again, it's where you had that sleepless night in 1970 and I had it in 2004. Because we were wrestling with some of those things, and we still will spend our life, you're 80 now, and you're still trying to unpack some of that. But
that's
another
right.
place that we can start backing up, because I think a lot of our audience isn't going, well, I maybe aren't struggling with some of those big things that you're talking about. But, you know, you may think, well, I'm not worth much, or I'm not that valuable. That's a belief, and that
that's
is going
right.
to have consequences in your life.
That's exactly right.
Right?
Yep.
And again, a biblical worldview, or this specifically in this area, Imago Dei, right there. What do you mean you're not worth something?
You're
the pinnacle of God's creation.
Yeah, you are the image of God.
Yeah, yeah.
When he made you, he didn't look at a monkey. He didn't look at a dog. When he made you, he looked at himself.
Yeah.
And made you like him. What do you mean you're worthless?
Yeah. Again, it's why I'm so passionate about this subject. Everybody listening, you have some things that you are believing, a mindset that you have that is causing damage to you.
And you might not even realize it.
Yeah. Now, this is why you ruined me, though, back in 2005, 2004, 2005, is there were things that I knew. Like, I knew, okay, I grew up in America, so materialism, that's going to be something I'm going to struggle with, right? Our culture. I got it. I know that. Where I couldn't go to sleep is I go, but what are the things that I don't see?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are the lies? Like, someone who grows up in a culture where they heard their whole life that a woman is a tool or a slave, they don't know any different. And until someone comes in and starts speaking into them, or until they have the Bible to teach them truth, that's just life for them.
Yeah.
So that's where I was wrestling. I was going, I have some beliefs that I don't even realize are wrong.
That's right.
Right?
And we can't realize they're wrong as long as we're in this bubble, this mindset bubble. One of the things that the Bible can do is challenge that mindset.
I know for me now, I'm 52 and I'm sitting here, I'm going, God has revealed, since I started wrestling with this, God has revealed some of those to me.
Yep.
I know I still have some that I have not been unpacked.
Right.
You know, Darrow, what I just thought of as I shared that, you know how most of those are revealed to me though, is through pain?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's true of most people?
I think pain can bring growth. We think of it as utterly negative, and it's not fun to go through, but it can shift things in our lives that need to be shifted and would not be shifted without going through the pain.
Yeah.
Another thing that can do it is to go cross-culturally and live in another culture for a while. and they will see things this way, and you'll say, what are they doing that for?
Yeah.
Or they'll look at you and they'll say, well, what are you doing this for?
Yeah.
And confronting another culture or being confronted by another culture can help you say, oh, that's what I really think. That's what I really do.
Yeah.
And there are consequences for those ideas, for those behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah. And to give an example of what you're talking about, like time would be a good one, right? Our Western culture, we're on time. And that's really important. In fact, you grow up in most families hearing like it's disrespectful to be late.
Yeah.
But then we go to other cultures and they talk about your God is on your wrist.
That's right.
You know, for you Westerners, your God is on your wrist. You're like, time controls you. And
that's right.
And neither one we would say is necessarily morally wrong.
No,
but there's consequences to both of them, right?
And we should be aware of both of them and live with both of them as part of our life.
Yeah, yeah.
So people say, well, time is on your wrist. You have a mechanistic view of time. Our concept of time is relational.
Yes.
We spend time with people. Mm-hmm. That's our concept of time.
And you've been in a lot of cultures where that's true, where they say that church is going to go from 10 to 11, and it actually goes from 10:30 to 2:30.
Yeah, right? Or 4 o'clock.
Yeah, or 4 o'clock,
yeah.
Because it's relational.
It's and relational. Really
just, we're done when we're done having our conversation, not when
That's exactly right.
And there's something beautiful about that.
There is. And somebody from the West who's always looking at the clock, you go into a culture like that, there's part of you that condemns it because you don't get anything done. And part of it is, oh man, I love this. I wish I didn't have to go home.
Yeah.
Because there's something about that
yeah.
space that we need to occupy and we're made to occupy.
I love, Daryl, how you talked about two things that can really help shift our worldview or maybe help us sense where our worldviews or our mindsets may be wrong. The Bible, one of them, which is why it's so important for us to be in it and in it often.
That's right.
Regularly, consistently, but also travel. I have often said international travel or travel crossing cultures, it's one of the best educations we can have.
It is.
Yeah.
I usually recommend to people coming out of high school, take a year off and go travel or go work in another country or go learn a language in another country, but get out of the United States.
Definitely.
Either before you go to college or before you graduate from college, because that's where you will get an education,
yeah.
more so than in a classroom.
Hey, from your No Gray Areas team, we just want to say thank you so much for listening. And if you're loving this episode, would you just take a moment and leave us a review and rating on whatever platform you're listening from? If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on the new podcast episodes that drop every other Wednesday. By leaving a review and subscribing, you help others discover our podcast's inspirational messages to effectuate positive change in their lives. Okay, let's jump back in to this episode. Well, here's another book you wrote called Emancipating the World, a Christian Response to Radical Islam.
And
Fundamentalist Atheism.
The and has to be there.
Why? Because I did not finish reading. That's why Daryl's saying that. As I'm holding this book up, I didn't read the complete title and he caught me on it. But it's important to have that there because...
Because today we're looking at what's going on in the Middle East with Hamas. And 20 years ago, we had the tragedy, the terrorist attack in New York.
Yeah,
and
9/11. Yep.
9/11. And who did that? Jihadists.
Yeah.
And
ideas have consequences.
Ideas have consequences. And we thought the whole nation focused on jihadists, because that was what was in our face. And at that time, I realized, you know, the church needs to realize we are fighting on two fronts. The jihadist is the fight from the East. But there's a fight in the West, and that is fundamentalist atheists.
Yeah.
These are people who do not believe in truth. The only thing they believe in is power.
Mm-hmm.
They are fundamentalists. They do not want any other ideas on the playing field of ideas but secular atheistic ideas.
Mm-hmm.
and they are fundamentalists. And we see this working its way out in our country today.
Yeah, we do.
Through the media, through education, through new government policies. These are atheists who are fundamentalists. They do not want anyone to challenge what they're doing. They do not want another idea out there.
Is that your definition of a fundamentalist? Is someone who's like, this is...
They're absolutely blind.
Yeah.
They okay. want no competition.
Yeah. So this is an atheist that isn't willing to sit down with you and I and have a conversation and dialogue about our views, and we're gonna both hear each other.
Those are the old liberals.
Yeah.
The old liberals believed in truth. And they so believed in truth, they and Christians created universities where people could come together and dialogue over what is
different
true.
Beliefs and what,
different
yeah.
beliefs, but yeah. what is true.
But what is okay,
there's
but
a place where we can come and talk about that.
But that's, I think, a key for our audience to understand again, too, there, because I said it, and you corrected me a little bit. I said different beliefs, and you said, but you took it back to truths, because there's a difference between saying, well, there's these different beliefs, and your belief can be your belief, and my belief can be my belief. There's a difference in saying that than saying, but there's a truth.
There is truth.
Whether you believe it or whether I believe it or not.
That's right. It's not my truth and your truth. It's not that we each have our own truth, which is what the way the word is being used today.
Yeah.
I have my truth. You have your truth. Stay away.
Yeah.
I don't want an argument. I don't want to hear anything else. No.
Yeah.
We need to argue. Civilly.
Yeah.
But we need a level playing field. And the old liberals, that's what they wanted because they believed truth existed and you could find it. And the place to find it is to bring ideas to a common marketplace of ideas where you could talk. Today, the universities are the opposite of that. They close down discussions. We live in a post-truth culture.
Yeah.
It's my opinion versus your opinion.
And this is a silly example, but I think it helps our audience understand it, where truth is truth, whether we believe it or not. I can say I don't believe in gravity. And when I climb up to the top of the building and jump off, my truth
reality
doesn't matter. My
the tells truth, you what's true.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter if I believe in gravity or not.
Yeah.
It's true.
That's right.
And when I jump off the building, I'm going to find that out. And there's all kinds of truths out there that's like that, where it doesn't matter if you believe it or not.
Yeah.
It's true. But when we live in a society where we can't actually have dialogue anymore, where we're trying to find the truth, or you're saying that society now is saying there really isn't any truth. It's just whatever.
It's whoever has the power. Truth, we're post-truth, post-moral. We are power. It's all about power. And you see that
so
happening.
So dangerous, isn't it?
You see that happening in our world today.
Yeah, yeah.
In this country.
Yeah.
Truth is gone. Power is what's real.
Well, and I guess I would say to our audience, if they don't believe that, you know, that's fine. If they're driving right now and they're listening to this, and they're going, I don't know if I necessarily agree with Daryl. I would say, watch.
Look around.
Watch for the next week or two. Watch what you read when you read the news, when you're watching the news, when you're
what's going on.
Watch very closely and read between the lines, and I think they'll find that there's a lot of truth to what you're saying.
Yeah,
no pun intended. So another book you wrote called "Don't Let Schooling Stand in the Way of Education: A Biblical Response to the Crisis in Public Education."
Yeah, public education, government-funded education. Is atheistic education. And that's what they want. It's to promote one atheistic culture.
Yeah.
And that's why I said earlier in our discussion, evolutionism is an ideology.
Yeah.
It's an ideology that everything is seen through the lens, the worldview of atheism.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's being promoted. Thinking isn't being promoted.
Yeah.
What's being promoted is an atheistic ideology, and that's not education.
And I would suggest, again, that there's probably subtle, like there's probably most of our listeners, I'm assuming, would say, well, I don't believe in evolution. But I would suggest that if you spent your life, like most of us did growing up in this country, and you went to a school system where from the time you were in kindergarten, that was being taught to you subtly, not just in science class, right, but in all the different classes. There are some subtle beliefs. Again, this is what rocked my world.
Yeah.
There's some subtle beliefs that you probably don't even realize that you picked up. And those beliefs become behaviors.
Right.
So because it's a belief, you have a behavior
that
you don't even realize is going back to that.
That's right. And that behavior will shape your life and shape the consequences of your life.
Uh-huh.
But an education will prepare you for life. It will give you the tools that you need to think. The way I describe it, if you read the book of Proverbs, you have three.
It's one of my favorite books in the Bible, by the way. I love it.
You have three words: knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. And sometimes you think, oh, they're interchangeable, but they're not. They're hierarchical. And below knowledge, you have data points. And we're all about data points today.
Mm-hmm.
We're all about information and data points. The Bible doesn't start there. That's the world in which we live. But the Bible starts with knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now I know. What does it mean? That's understanding. What does this knowledge mean? The third?
Wisdom.
Wisdom. What am I going to do with this?
Mm-hmm.
And education, educating image bearers of God, will help them understand these things. The church, Christendom, used to create universities because the integration point of all knowledge was God. It was theological integration point. And these universities didn't just study theology and morals. They studied science.
Definitely.
Because Christians realized that God revealed himself through what he made.
Uh-huh.
So there was a vigorous program of science. When Darwin came, the church stuck its head in the sand and created Bible schools and stopped building universities.
Uh-huh.
Because the only thing that was important was the Bible.
Well,
God's how he revealed himself in creation no longer mattered.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning, dichotomizing things.
That's right.
Where we dichotomize, we've got like, okay, we got our Bible over here that's important, but what does that have to do with science and history?
That's right.
And math?
It doesn't.
And
it doesn't.
It doesn't. But we're not saying that. We're actually saying, oh, absolutely, it does.
It does.
It has everything to do with it. He's the creator of math and history and
that's
science,
right.
and he revealed
himself through his word, but he has also revealed himself through the things that he has made. So as Paul argues, they are without excuse.
Mm-hmm.
That's how clear general revelation is.
Yeah.
And that's what this book deals with. We need to get away from propaganda to go back to education.
Yeah.
And the church needs to lead the way in this.
Yeah.
And Christians need to really think seriously about what their kids are doing in public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean there's not good public school teachers.
Yeah.
A third of the teachers I've read in public schools are Christians.
Yeah.
God bless them.
Yeah.
But
so necessary.
It's the policies and the curriculum that's being taught in public schools that is absolutely devastating.
Yeah. You have another book that came out about a year ago, Call for
Balladeers.
Pursuing Art and Beauty for the Discipling of Nations. pursuing art and beauty. I love this one. So I bring this up often in the podcast. Philosophers and theologians for 2,000 years, over 2,000 years, have talked about beauty, truth, and goodness, right? Yep, those are
that's
three.
Right.
So philosophers that didn't even necessarily believe the Bible looked at this world and saw the value of that.
That's right.
Theologians look at our world because they believe in Imago Dei, and that God is the creator and the source and the beginning of everything, that is beauty, truth, and goodness is important. But you're bringing up art. Yeah. And beauty primarily.
That's right.
Why is that so important?
Two reasons. One, in order to give power to a movement, you need artists.
Hmm.
You need artists.
And so I want to help. When you're saying an artist, you're not just talking about someone who's painting, although painting's part of it.
Singers,
but an artist could be a storyteller,
scriptwriters, movie producers.
Yeah.
Artists.
Yep.
They are the storytellers that shape the culture.
Yeah. And so goes the narrative, so goes the culture in
That's
a lot of
right.
ways, right?
The way I describe it, you have worship, which is cult. Worship, cult, culture. And then below culture, you have institutions. And the institutions are framed by the culture, and the culture is framed by worship.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus tells us we're to make disciples of all nations. He doesn't say save Christians from every nation. He wants nations to be discipled. He wants to see nations transformed.
Mm-hmm.
And to transform nations, you need the whole church engaged. And the artists are critical in that engagement, because there's probably no more powerful tool than the tools of the artist.
I agree.
To shape culture.
I agree.
And thus shape the institutions and the lives of whole nations.
Yeah. You know how I know that's true? Because I'm 52 and a song comes on from the 80s. 80s had either the best or worst music, in my opinion.
Yeah.
There was some really good music and some really bad music at the time. But a song will come on and I literally will feel the emotions of that moment from 30-some years ago and how a song could shape and move
me. Of course.
So when you're talking about the power of the arts, you see that. You see that around us. Movies, TV, storytelling. Storytelling has been, before
it's
there
huge.
Was the movie, it was storytelling around a fire that's been through in every culture.
Yeah.
And it shaped them.
And the word we use today is narrative, not truth. We used to talk about truth. Now we talk about narrative. And narrative is a story.
Yeah, and the story may be true or may not be true.
May be true, may not be true.
Shifted.
That's right. That's the shift.
Yeah.
And you promote the narrative. You promote the story. And who does that better than anybody else?
Artists. Yeah.
That's what they're made for.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I wrote it. The other is I just knew a whole lot of artists over the years. I mean, I'm old.
Yeah.
And I spent years traveling around the world and meeting with Christians who are artists, and I've wept with them. And I've wept with them because they don't find support in the church for their art unless they're doing religious art.
Mm-hmm.
If they're leading music, they're leading an evangelistic campaign, they're justified.
Okay.
But the church does not understand that art needs no justification. So I've met Christians who I've wept with because they feel so lonely because they don't find a place in the church, and they go out into the world and people in the world say, what are you doing here? You're a Christian.
Right.
I knew a gal who is a fashion model from Africa, beautiful woman, and somebody in Holland picked her up and said, come to Holland, we're going to make you a big fashion star. And the first thing he told her, she had to strip. And she had the courage to say thank you, but no, and went back to Africa. But how do you fit in the world?
Yeah.
So I've wept with artists, all kinds of artists, where is my place? What do I do?
Yeah.
And that's the book was written for them.
You know, one place that I think when I tie this together, and we can kind of wrap up with this, and then I want to do the two truths and a lie with you. But food is something that I've been thinking a lot about lately, and how it, and I know our audience right now is going, food, what are you talking about? How do you bring that in this conversation? I just literally look at food and I go, how can someone believe in that we're just evolved animal when they look at what humans do with food? And this goes to art.
Of course.
We are artists with food.
Of course.
And then it goes to the beauty and the goodness of God. My taste buds. Why do I have taste buds? If all eating is for me to survive.
Is fuel,
then I don't need taste. Why did God give me taste buds? Because he's good.
He's good.
Because he loves beauty. And he wants us to explore and find these herbs that he created and then mix them together. And like coffee. Coffee doesn't just happen. To have a cup of coffee, you're having to take that plant and then get that bean and then roast it to it, and then you roast it all different, you know, dark, lighter, and then you grind it up, and then on all this stuff that we do with food as humans, to me, displays we're not animals.
We're made in the image of God, who is creative.
And he's a good God and a beautiful God that loves goodness and beauty, because he gave us taste buds to enjoy those things.
That's right.
And
eyes to see beautiful things, and ears to hear beautiful music and poetry.
Yes, yes. That's why this is such a, I think, a valuable conversation. And I know our audience got a lot out of it. And I love this conversation because I leave here again encouraged and motivated again to live out that Imago Deo in my life, to live that out. You reminded me again that I'm going to go home to someone who's one rung up from me, my wonderful, beautiful wife, and I'm going to treat her as an image bearer of God, but as the top, as the pinnacle of his creation, like literally the pinnacle. I always said humans are the pinnacle of his creation, yeah. But I like what you did
She's
with me today.
She's the crown of the crown.
She's the crown of the crown. Love that. I love that. And man, for all of us, all our male listeners, treat women like that.
You want to know like how that. Worldview works? Understand that a woman is the crown of the crown and treat her like it.
Yeah, yeah. And not just my wife and daughter, but the other women that I'm going to see, they're not a tool.
Yeah.
They're not a piece of property.
Yeah.
They're not a slave. They're the crown of the crown, and so we treat them like that. And that's how worldview plays out, like you're saying. Daryl, thank you so much. If someone wanted to get a hold of you, if they wanted to see, because you are, I pointed out a couple of books you've written. How many books have you written?
18 or 19
books. You have a website where you have blogs that you've written on.
Yeah, for my blogs are Daryl Miller and Friends. It's not just I who write blogs, but friends of mine who are in the same genre write blogs. So Daryl Miller and Friends is one place. DiscipleNations.org is the organization that Scott Allen and Bob Moffat and I started. You can
love both those guys too. Tell them hello for
me. Okay.
Yeah.
You can go to disciplenations.org to the website and go to info, and there'll be a way to contact me there. And the podcast that we do every week, Ideas Have Consequences. So those three ways are if you want to be in contact and get more of this stuff, that's the way you can do it.
Yeah. And when you say you do the podcast, is that you, Bob, and Scott together?
Bob, Scott, and a guy named Luke, who's our techie guy, who's also a young mid-20s guy who understands worldview with a young mind. He's always asking profound questions, so he's part of it. And then we have guests on. We just had Marvin Alasky on this last week.
Oh, I had dinner with Marvin in Austin when he was a professor at the University of Texas years ago.
Yeah.
And he wrote The Tragedy of American Compassion.
Great
right?
book. It shaped DNA. It shaped our organization.
Yeah, yeah.
It was
brilliant guy.
Yeah, very brilliant. Oz Guinness, Nancy Piercy, folks like this, we have the privilege of interviewing.
So. Audience, you have to listen to this podcast. Please go listen to these guys, because you're just naming some people. All these people you're naming have helped form me on what I am today.
Good.
So that's amazing.
They formed us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so we'll have that in the description notes as well, all these things that you mentioned. And so audiences listening, if they're they were driving so they couldn't write it down, they can get home, go to the Instagram page or the No Gray Areas website or a podcast website, and they can look for this information there as well, and there'll be links to it. So
good.
One of the fun things we do is we do two truths and a lie. It's ironic because it's no gray areas, and we've been talking about truth, and I'm going to ask you to lie to me now. But
okay.
It's a fun way for people to get to know you. You're going to give me three statements.
Okay.
Two of them are truths about you, and one is a lie, and I have to try to guess the lie.
Okay. My wife, Marilyn, and I have always had a heart to help the poor. For 20 years, Marilyn has traveled to Honduras 1 to 3 times a year to work in 2 very remote, impoverished communities. My calling has taken me on over 4 million miles of air travel to speak about the relationship between worldview and poverty or culture and development. We've just talked about food. And one of the ways that we have been blessed is by enjoying cuisines from all over the world. And one of my favorite dishes was a savory delicacy of jungle snails soup.
Jungle snail soup. Okay. All right. Those are good, Daryl. The middle one is true. You traveled 4 million miles.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's a lot of miles. Yeah. That's a number that I don't think people could wrap their mind around, really.
No.
But you have done a lot of traveling. I'm going to say the only one that I'm thinking the first one may be not true is that when you said you've always, I'm wondering if at some point you were transformed and your renewed understanding of a biblical worldview is what gave you such a passion for this. So I'm going to say that first one is a lie.
No, my wife has traveled to Honduras for 20 years, 1 to 3 times a year, to work in 2 very poor, impoverished communities.
Same communities?
Same communities for 20 years.
Wow. So this has just been your heart. It's always been your heart.
That's one of the reasons we got married.
Yeah.
When we got to know each other.
So it's what drew you to each other.
We both had a heart for the poor.
Yeah.
And we still have, and God has taken our lives in the direction of helping the poor. Yeah. But in 2 different paths.
Wow. So you didn't like the snail dish then, I guess.
Worst thing I've ever had.
Okay. I should have guessed that was a lie, but it just seemed so far out there where I'm like, that's probably he's.
Well, I love escargot.
Yeah.
But these jungle snails.
Yeah. I've been going to Brazil the last year a number of times, and I've eaten some pretty strange things in the jungle down there, but not snails so far.
No,
so
and these are huge snails. They're not like little garden snails or French escargot. They probably weigh 0.5 pound, and they're about this big around.
How many times have you been pretty like sick from the food? Because you had to have eaten a lot of crazy stuff.
I have, and I've been sick a few times.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have memories of being sick.
Yeah, not good ones.
Not good ones.
Yeah. Well, Daryl, thank you so much. This did my heart so good just getting to visit with you.
It's good to
so
see thank you again, Pat.
Yeah, I think it's been, it's been over a decade since we've seen each other.
It has been.
For sure.
It has been.
For sure.
And anytime, I love this kind of a venue.
Yeah.
And anytime you want to get together and talk about some other things that are related to this stuff, let me know.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Thanks, Daryl.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining in this insightful conversation with the intelligent and wise Daryl Miller. If you love this episode, make sure to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And we'll see you soon for our next episode.